Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody, and happy Tuesday night. Final live Tuesday night of the month. The next Tuesday nights will be pre-recorded. That is mainly because this Tuesday, I will be traveling back from the amazing Psy Games. I depart literally about 5:36 in the morning. We will be driving to Virginia to go speak at Psy Games. I am so entirely excited about this event. This is a first of its kind psychic abilities event, basically like a psychic Olympics where teams and individuals will be competing in the worlds of remote viewing and telekinesis and mind sight and other things. It's gonna be awesome. I literally cannot wait to go be part of this. It's going to be great. I can't wait. We're going to be getting tons of interviews from that. So get ready for a nice long episode next week. But that will be pushed remotely. A good friend of mine will be here because I will be returning that night, coming in studio as things go out, and then leaving the next morning for work. So the following Tuesday will be pre-recorded. But as always, same as in our old days, these days, anytime we are off the air, it is always new content. It is never pre-recorded, never a best of, never a greatest hits or a clip episode. It is always new interviews, new data, new stuff. And while you are online checking out everything from Psy Games, folks, make sure to stop on by the website of our guest here in this first segment. That is goosebumpsparanormalsociety.weebly.com. That is the website of the Goosebumps Paranormal Society in Pennsylvania. That is our guest in the first segment. Welcome to the show, Jimmy and D Trick. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good.
Fantastic. Hi, Chris.
Thanks so much for having us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for coming on. I love talking with paranormal investigators because paranormal investigation was one of my first forays into any of this research. Before I ordered the SRI videotape on remote viewing that Art Bell used to advertise during commercials, all that kind of stuff. Before any of that, before I dove deep into UFOs, UAPs, it was the Black Lotus tapes. And the original EVP recordings, stuff like that. That fascinated me as an audio engineer and an up-and-coming audio engineer. It gave me chills and really put me on a path exploring those things and going out on location and doing paranormal investigations with groups. So,
are you saying it gave you goosebumps?
A little bit. And I hey, definitely...
That'd be a good name for a paranormal group.
It would be. It would be a fantastic eerie name, as a matter of fact. Eerily accurate. How did you guys, A, how did you meet? B, were you involved with paranormal before you met? Or did it take you coming together to get into the paranormal?
We met on a blind date.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Yeah, blind date.
I was the blind one. But.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a blind date. Somebody suggested that we meet, and he was from out of town working in Pittsburgh. And so I said, okay, I'll show you around town, and had no expectations, a blind date. What was your opinion?
My opinion is our first date, I thought it went very well. The second date, we went to an amusement park because I like roller coasters and she likes roller coasters. Mm-hmm. And it was at that second date that I knew in my mind, I said, this gal has got to be my wife.
Oh, that's nice.
Has to be. Second date.
Yeah.
Incredible.
I was always interested in paranormal, but I never had anybody to do anything with to push it forward.
And what about you,
and
Jimmy?
You?
Well, with paranormal, are you talking about paranormal?
Yeah.
I got involved in the paranormal back Oh, I'm going to say way back. My dad passed away in 1997. I'm from Detroit. I grew up in Detroit. My dad passed away in 1997, and then my mom passed away 3 years later in 2000. Now, when each of them passed away, I had some really strange things happening to me and around my house that I really could only relate to something that they would do because they were pranksters. Oh, my God. My mom and dad were so much fun. But the things that happened to me, I could only relate to them. And that got me thinking at that time, well, maybe there's more to this spiritual world than we actually know. Because maybe they're still around. And at the same time, the ghost hunter shows started popping up around 2000, 2002, something like that.
Yep.
I started watching those. I go, hey, I could get into this. This is really cool. I like this.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I hooked up with somebody in Michigan in 2003. We started our own group together. About 4 years later, she decided she wanted to go her own way and look at other avenues. So sure. I continued with our group and kept it going. At that time, it was my group. And then when I came to Pennsylvania in 2010, I brought it with me.
Okay. Okay. And what were the experiences after the passing of your parents? If you don't mind sharing them, I know sometimes experiences can be very personal. They can still bring forward a lot of traumas sometimes. So if you're reticent to share, that's not a problem. But if you're open to share, we would love to hear what were the experiences that brought you into exploring the other side.
I can because there's a number of them. I don't even know where to start. I mean, when my dad passed, I moved in with my mom because she was very lonely at the time, and I was single at the time. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd just move in and just keep her company too. So I moved into. She had a finished basement in a condo, so I moved into the bedroom downstairs. And this was about a month after my dad passed. I'm laying there in bed, middle of the night. I kept my bedroom door closed, latched, because my mom had a couple of cats, and I didn't want them coming to my bedroom. So I remember laying there on my stomach, and I could, for some reason, I could hear like somebody walking on the carpet at the end of my bed, like pacing back and forth. And I'm laying there and I'm awake now. And I'm thinking, somebody broke into the house. Somebody's in here going to rob us or something. So I was just laying still, but I kept hearing this pacing, these footprints back and forth, back and forth.
Oh, wow.
But my door was closed, so I knew it couldn't be the cats. So the pacing stopped and my eyes were open, but I'm looking down to the side here, and all of a sudden, the whole bed jerked, like somebody took a knee and kicked the end of the bed to say, like, hey, remember me? I'm your dad, you know? And I jumped up and turned around. Of course, there was nobody there. I said, Dad, was that you? You know, of course, I didn't see anything, but it was such a weird, really weird experience, but it was real. I mean, the bed jerked like crazy, like somebody kicked it to get my attention, but nobody was there.
Wow. Wow. And was that the only experience like that you had?
No. No. Yeah. There was a thing with when my mom passed. Everybody was over in the condo and family, all these family members. And my oldest son, Jeff, he was outside and he came in the house. He says, Dad, did you just close the garage door? And I said, no, I don't. I was in the garage. I don't have the control, but I didn't close the door. He goes, well, the garage door just closed down. Well, here's the weird part. The funeral home came and picked up my mom because she died at the condo. Mm. And when they drove away, that's when the garage door closed down. And I kind of laughed. I said, every time mom left the house, she closed the garage door.
Never left it open.
Yeah, she never left the garage door open.
Wow.
She always closed the garage door. So when she left this time, for the final time, the door came down by itself.
Wow.
Well, there's a lot more things I can go into,
but
I know we're pressed for time. So.
Well, it's not about being pressed for time, honestly. But it is interesting because it brings up a point that we've talked about with numerous investigators, and that is the difference between a haunting and a spirit, a ghost and a spirit. You know, the spirit being like a loved one who is hanging around for a little while or lingering, as opposed to a ghost who is there due to traumatic circumstances. A prime example would be like the ghosts of Gettysburg, you know, who are still there and still in uniform and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into that in a minute. But even that differentiation of, you know, the spirit being the one that's giving you a sign that is there because you are still bereaved, you are still attached to them, you know, and the idea that, yes, they may attach themselves to something, but they may also be attached to you in your mourning process as well, you know.
Well, that's true. I believe that when people pass on, I believe, now this is my own opinion.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, I'm not an expert.
Thank you for noting that opinion.
Yeah. But I believe that the spirits of the people that pass hang around for a while because they want to make sure that their family members are okay. And once they realize that they're going to be okay, then they move on to the next dimension or the next place or wherever it is that they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, especially with the idea of that, and there are numerous cultures who, for that reason, keep bodies with them for a long time. Like I remember still going as a kid to traditional Cajun wakes where we actively stayed in the funeral home with the body for days before we took them to the funeral, you know, to see that concept change within my lifetime. In the small rural town that my family was from, and even in the east side of Houston, where the people that owned the funeral parlor were all of from a town about two towns away from the small Cajun town in Louisiana. But they understood that culture. And when my grandfather died in seventh grade, like I stayed the night with him in the funeral parlor. So, yeah, the idea of that is past, and it's very interesting to see how that mourning process is no longer there in that kind of way in our society.
They used to have before the funeral homes, people were laid out in their living rooms, and they were there for days, and you just went about your business, and you know, mom or dad or whoever was laying in the coffin in your living room. Mm-hmm. While you went about, and then people came over. So
and very that, different now. That's just it. At that point, you know, that's early 1900s. That was that is a lot of the reasons why it turned from the parlor into the living room, things like that. Because your parlor was where that happened. And the ideas even of covering mirrors, covering reflective surfaces whenever people died. Like that was still fully practiced up until that point. So it's interesting to see the changes in A, the way society views death, and also the way that we view spirits and our connection to spirits. Because like you were saying, Jimmy, there is a huge pop culture aspect to paranormal investigation now. There did not used to be. It was a very, I'm not going to say very secretive and shadowy thing, but it was something that like maybe you saw a pull tab on something at your community center.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Like you were involved with a buddy who was like, "Hey man, I heard about this group." You know, but now, and it's interesting because even now the range of technology that you can get that's readily available, like we have tons of it on the Curious Research site and on the Curious Realm store. And, you know, Let's start getting into some of the investigations that you have been on, some of the various types of investigations, specifically Gettysburg and stuff like that, with you guys being right up there in historic Pennsylvania and everything else.
Oh, we love Gettysburg.
Oh, yeah. We've probably been to Gettysburg, I'm going to say probably 15 times. And each time we go, there is definitely something different that we get on our either EVPs, voices, or some kind of recorders or video or something. There's always something new every time we go to Gettysburg.
Sometimes we go, we make a special trip and go just there, but other times we may be going, say, to Boston, and then on our way home, we plan an overnight trip to Gettysburg. And that's what we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks. We're doing an event in central Pennsylvania, cool. And then on our way home, we always find a reason to stop at Gettysburg.
We have to go to Gettysburg all the time.
there's just so much. We've gone to the Cashtown Inn that's right down the road from Gettysburg, and
okay.
it was the headquarters for the Confederacy, and General A.P. Hill.
A.P. Hill, yes, the Confederate General A.P. Hill, yes.
Took over the building, and it is now a bed and breakfast, and we were lucky enough to reserve that room, and we stayed.
Yeah, we actually stayed overnight, a couple nights in the room that A.P. Hill used as his headquarters room.
Oh, cool.
He slept in that room. So we slept in the same room.
Cool. And then another little backstory. So when I met Jim, he had a Union uniform. What are you?
Major General.
Major General. And we go to Gettysburg dressed up like that. And he said he didn't have any pictures. I'm a photographer as well. So I said, well, the next time we go, I'll wear your uniform and I'll get some pictures with you on the battlefield. And so it was very interesting. So when we did the Cashtown Inn, we brought that as sort of a trigger. We hung the uniform in the on the back of the door at the hotel. And so we set up a laser grid. We had cameras running all night. We had a digital recorder.
I don't know if you can see this or not.
Oh, yeah. Classy. Love it.
Yeah, well, he told me that, yeah, he wanted to get me involved. And I said, listen, if you think I'm wearing a bonnet and, you know, girdle and all that, and up to here in a bonnet.
Yeah, yeah.
Not happening.
Yeah, no. No, she would have none of that.
No, if I could be Miss Kitty from On Gunsmoke, I'm in.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so we did the cash on him. So we set up by the... When we did do that together, that was the 150th anniversary. And the ladies that were dressed like that, none of them would talk to me. They wouldn't look at me.
Well, here's the thing. These other ladies were dressed as the women and wives of the Confederacy, the people that were there. Dee was dressed as Southern Belle with all this beautiful gown and stuff.
Yeah,
and they
looked
at her like she was a little hussy or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I want nothing to do with you in it.
I do declare.
Yeah.
But yeah, none of the ladies would talk to me. They wouldn't even look at me. They would talk to him and smile at him, and nod their head.
But it's so funny because when you're in Gettysburg, and you don't even have to dress in the period, but you will see people that do that, and they are in character 24/7. They act like the people that actually live there at the time, and that's the way they talk.
Reenacted,
that's the way they act.
For sure.
Reenacted. Yeah, they won't. They, you know, you can't really talk to them and say or ask them questions about their personal lives because they won't tell you. They're in character,
yeah,
and they're only talking about what happened back in 1860s.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It was very, very interesting. I never did that before. But going back to the cash.
So.
We had the trigger, we had the laser grid, video cameras, audio recorder.
There it is right there.
Yes, there it is. Beautiful place. It's a room right to the far right on the second floor. And so we had everything set up, all set to go, in a four-poster bed that, can I tell you, made noise. if you moved your finger, it made a noise.
Oh, it creaked like crazy.
Yeah.
You couldn't move. You couldn't breathe without this bed making noise.
But I can sleep through anything. Nothing wakes me up. We were asleep. And then all of a sudden, I felt the bed like being jarred and woke me up.
Shaking like crazy.
Yeah. So I said, honey, did you hear that? Did you feel that? No.
Yeah. And I was laying on my stomach with my right arm, like kind of like over my head on a pillow.
Yeah.
And I woke up at the same time she did. And my arm was shaking violently like crazy.
Oh,
not
wow.
like a spasm, but like something had a hold of my arm. It was shaking like crazy. And all of a sudden, when I opened my eyes and looked, it stopped just like that. It just completely stopped. Here's the weird thing, though.
And we just thought it's an interesting
that wasn't
thing.
It.
Like a weird, yeah, we thought.
That wasn't the weird part.
That's,
yeah.
you know.
No, here's the weird part.
Here's the weird part.
It was about a year and a half later, we were talking to, when we were back in Gettysburg, talking to one of the historians at the visitor center. And I was telling him about my experience with my shaking arm and where I was. And he kind of smiled and he was nodding his head like, yeah. I go, what's so funny? He says, well, you know the story behind that, don't you? I go, I don't know what you're talking about. He says, General A.P. Hill, when he slept in that room, he went to sleep that night because he was going to take on the battle the next day. Something happened during the night where his steward had to go in and wake him up in that bed for an emergency. They grabbed a hold of his forearm and shook it violently to wake him up.
Wow.
I'm going,
wow.
Are you kidding me?
That is wild. That is wild.
All started to make sense then. Like, oh, okay. So there was more to the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, once again, the idea of spirits inhabiting places, things like that, places that have meant something to them, places that were one of the last traumatic places they were at.
Yes.
That kind of
absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
I was with a friend all of maybe 8-9 years ago, speaking at a podcasting conference in San Antonio, and he was staying at the Manger Hotel. He was wanting to start a podcast on paranormal stuff. And this was before I had ever become Curious Realm. I was still Dudes and Beer at the time and had my Talking Sound podcast and, but had a podcast consultancy, things like that. So we had a drink. We brought him up to the room. We recorded an episode. And after we wrapped the episode, this is me and him in this room. It's probably about 1-2 in the morning. We have had one drink. Behind me, as we're wrapping the gear up, the crystal doorknob to the bathroom starts moving.
Oh, I like that.
Turns, and the door opens.
Oh.
No adjoining room. Nothing like that. And we were both just like, whoa. That's crazy. Because it wasn't like the door was partially ajar and it moved, you know, the AC in the room kicked on and it caused a vacuum. Nothing mm-hmm. like that. This was
the
a non-air conditioned
doorknob
in the Manger Hotel. And that doorknob turned, it unclicked and it opened. Like,
wow.
And when I went to leave, we hung out for about another 30 minutes and just sat there. And like waited like in utter silence. But when I left, I found the old security guard downstairs. He was probably about 70 years old, something like that, working overnights, and asked him and then sat there until about 4 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Just listening to stories from this guy of people who have run from the hotel in horror.
Oh, geez.
From, oh, man.
And they, you know, the Manger is known as one of the most haunted places in America, stuff like that. It's right there where they burned the bodies from the Alamo and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a pretty interesting site. And when you start getting into places like that, Gettysburg, Goliad is another really haunted one down here in Texas. Even battleships. Things like that. These are places where people spent passionate, passionate moments of their life that they were intimately attached to. And once again, maybe a very good reason why their energies are still around. What are some of the other things that you guys have found at Gettysburg and come across over there?
Some EVPs. Now, EVPs, when you watch them on TV and the Ghost Hunter shows, you know, they're boom, oh, happen all the time. We have a recorder going, ask questions. Oh, let's listen to it back. And, oh, you know, there's these fabulous EVPs. Does not happen like that.
No, it does not.
No,
the thing about with these audio recorders, they record at a different frequency than the human ear can detect. So you may not hear it at the time, but the recorder might be picking up something at that moment that you can play back later on.
Right. You can't audibly hear it, but when you play it back, you can hear it. And that's exactly what happened to us a couple different times. And there you go. You shed a little battlefield at, mm-hmm. at Gettysburg, the locals say Gettysburg.
Gettysburg.
But yes, digital recorder, left it sitting out, running. Nobody was around. We stood there in silence and just hung out for, I don't know, how long was it?
30 minutes, maybe?
Yeah,
maybe 30
like
minutes?
Didn't hear anything.
Yeah.
Until we went back and played the audio recorder back.
And this was at Spangler Spring. Now, Spangler Spring is a freshwater spring where both sides, the north and the south, would get fresh water. And when each side would do it, the other side would not take shots at those people, because back then it was like honorable. Okay, you get water, go ahead, get water.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then let's get water, and then we'll go back to battle after everything's done.
Okay? Men of honor.
Yeah, and men of honor. So this was at Spangler Spring. We left the recorder running on a rock for 30 minutes. Nothing was around, no people, no cars, no nothing. It was, if you want to say it was dead silent, it was dead silent. We got back to the room and turned the recorder on, and what we heard were repetitive gunshots.
Pop, 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 pop,
like a battle. And you could not hear that when we were there at all. Yeah, the Spangler Spring right there.
Uh-huh.
And just a lot of gunshots. And you absolutely knew it was gunshots. There's no question in anybody's mind. We play these recordings at events and presentations that we do for people. And when we play this EVP, I don't tell them. I said, I just want you to listen to what this is and tell me what you think. And they hear, they go, oh, my God, it's gunshots. And it's exactly what we heard, too. The same thing, yes.
Well, and, you know, that bit, once again, EVP is one of the things that brought me into the world of investigating these things to begin with. And as an audio engineer, any gear that does such things, I'm sitting literally next to my reel-to-reel tape recorder right now. like, they are precious to me, and I know them intimately. And even the idea of EVPs, whenever they first occurred, the idea that a ghost could manipulate the weak record field, the weak magnetic field around a record head, to manipulate the oxide and put their voice on the tape. That was the concept. And now, I had my doubts and concepts of how that could translate to digital to a long time. Because, of course, analog is totally different than digital.
Right.
Yes.
And I've said it before, folks, it's not that a ghost can manipulate the ones and zeros of the compression of a digital file. What it is you are talking about a piezoelectric element in a microphone. And in the same way that a ghost could manipulate the magnetic field around a record head to pick up a small, soft sound, they could do the same thing with the piezo of a microphone. In a hypersonic way, all kinds of the ultrasonic way, what have you. The idea of being able to put that on there and not hear, you brought up another good point, which we bring up all the time. Like, even whenever I present about examining data from paranormal investigations, is the idea of you shouldn't be looking at it in that moment. You know, the ideas that are put forth in a lot of paranormal shows where they're walking around and they're stopping and rewinding and looking at it again, like, that is not how data is looked at or garnered in a real field investigation. You take pictures, you move on, you keep going, stuff like that. You document, and you look at it later, you know, because looking at it, we kind of see the same thing on this show about preparation for a thing. And for an investigation, whether it's Sasquatch, what have you, you should have just a rote checklist of items and a map of where you're going. You shouldn't be like deep diving into YouTube videos about the location and the lore of it, because you're basically polishing the filter through which you're going to look at your data at that point.
Well, you know, we do investigations for different clients. It could be a business. It could be a house. And what people don't really understand is when you do an investigation for, let's say somebody lives in a house, they got things going on, and you spend the evening there, and they want results right away.
Yeah.
They don't understand that everything you record has to be played back
in real time,
and then more than in real time, because you stop
and then,
it,
and then in
you
third
listen to
speed.
It, you, yeah, and they don't understand how long it takes. If you record 8 hours of video or 8 hours of audio, it's going to take you at least 8 hours to go back and review it, if
at
not
a minimum.
Longer. They
at
don't understand it. They want to know what's going on right now. It doesn't happen that way.
Yeah. And that's just it. You know, like, don't get me wrong, Poltergeist, smooth in my top 10 movies, love it. Saw it in the theater as a kid. Utter fiction is the way that paranormal investigation occurs. Utter fiction. The things in that are fantasized and really extrapolated from sure case files and stuff like that, but extrapolated and extremized, you know. And once again, we've talked about it with the Klinga brothers. They live right down the road in San Antonio. They've been on the show numerous times. The idea of how those things are hyped, like they'll straight up say, like, we got out when people started telling us we need to do this. And they're like, but that's not an investigation. Like, sorry if we filmed for 3 days and got nothing.
Sometimes that happens.
Welcome to a 3 day long paranormal investigation where we filmed for 3 days and got nothing.
Just because nothing's happening when you're there does not mean that there's nothing happening.
And just nothing happening at that time. You can't just tell a ghost or a spirit, say, I need you to respond
perform.
To this question right now. It doesn't work that way.
You're the clown. Perform for me.
Precisely.
And you know, it really is sadly that concept in a lot of circles, you know, because and even here right down the road, San Antonio, another guy that just belongs in groups that I belong to. Prime example, post videos all the time of lights in his backyard about 3-4 nights a week. And it's one of those, you know, if you're recording them 3-4 nights a week and you're standing in the same location, that may not be an anomaly at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, don't get me wrong, the Marfa lights are there, but they've been there for hundreds of years. You know, but when you're staring and you're near an airport and kind of near a military base and things like that, you've lost the 3-5% anomaly range now and stepped fully into the range of known quantitative.
Yes.
And the acceptance of that has to be there. Like, even as an investigator, you have to, I wear my skeptic S like Superman. Like, my job as a skeptic is to have my mind changed by data and to be looking for the data that will change my mind. You know,
that's exactly how we feel. We try to debunk every single thing that happens. We're not the typical, you know, you hear a noise and go, that's my grandmother.
Well, that's our number one priority. When we gather evidence, our number one priority is to try to debunk it. Try to find out. There's got to be a logical explanation for what's happening here. And we'll just run the gambit and just keep going and going and going until we have exhausted every possible thing. When we can't figure out if it's logical, then we'll move ahead and say, well, maybe it's paranormal. We'll move into the next step and try to figure out what's going on here.
Well, we always start our shows off with the Webster definition of paranormal, and it means that it cannot be scientifically proven. So, and then we always like to say, what exactly does that all involve? You know, is it because people think that, well, everybody has their own beliefs. That's the other thing too.
Sure.
We're not here to tell you you're right, you're
Absolutely.
Wrong. We're right. Everybody has their own belief, and there's no experts. There's people that, so we like to say paranormal, ghosts, spirits, Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Cryptids, aliens.
When we do our presentations for events and that, we do about a 45-minute PowerPoint with a lot of evidence in that. We don't try to convince anybody of anything.
Yeah.
We just give them the evidence that we've gathered, and we say, you draw your own conclusions. I don't care what you think. I really don't care.
Yeah.
And I don't care what you think, but I think. I don't care. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well,
but,
yeah.
Just draw your own conclusion from what we're presenting you,
yeah.
and just roll with it. That's it.
Well, and, you know, that brings up something that we talk about regularly here, and that is the idea that even if given data, even if you, through investigation of 3-4 months of going to somebody's property and prove the fact that they're, you know, possibly living on a fault line or something like that that's causing these anomalies in their house, that does not remove their experience. That does not
right.
remove
exactly.
the way that those experiences have changed them, the way that they view the world around them, the way I describe it is having your keyhole pried open with a crowbar. That's what happens when you have a paranormal experience, whether it's UFO, Sasquatch, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is different at that point. And that's okay.
Sure.
It's all right.
Yep.
And it's okay if data leads to it being something else. That doesn't remove your experience and what brought you down the path of revelation to other things.
Right.
Yep.
Well, and that's exactly, we started off with paranormal being ghost spirits, and we got brought into the Sasquatch, into the Bigfoot realm. We were on the show Finding Bigfoot.
Yep.
And through my cousin and David Dragason, rest his soul. He opened the whole field up to us, and we have just gone and opened our eyes to, you know, like Bigfoot. To like Bigfoot, UFOs, aliens, ghosts, light anomalies. There's something going on, and we, and I say we as like humans, we might not be able to mentally understand exactly what it is that's going on. There are some people that are going to tell you, hey, this is exactly what's going on. This is exactly what's happening. That's their theory. Everybody has a theory.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
fine. You know, if that's yeah. what you want to believe, that's fine. If we want to believe something else, that's fine. But don't tell me I'm wrong with what I believe.
Well, and yeah. that is something that the cryptozoology, UFO, what have you, that is a point that we bring up regularly, even as curious research, is the idea of there are no experts.
No,
because
right.
unfortunately, none of this is like solid fact proven yet. It's still hypothesis within science, things
yep.
like that. So while there are people who are expert on the history, the stories, cases, what have you, there's no like UFO expert.
Right.
You know, like there is like a Boeing 747 expert.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, when it's
something you can't quantify.
Really, right. really, really good friends with Ken Gerhard.
Oh,
cryptozoologist.
He's coming
great,
to an event
yeah,
we're going
absolutely,
to.
Absolutely, exactly.
Be there
the
weeks.
Pennsylvania
yeah.
Bigfoot, and
yeah.
you know, it's one of those. Not a, he will never say he's a Bigfoot expert. He's a
no.
cryptozoologist because Bigfoot isn't proven yet. So, like, you could
right.
be a panda expert all day long.
And that's the way I think. I mean, when it comes to Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, I'm still a skeptic about this.
I'm
the kind of person, I need a little bit more
sure.
evidence, more proof, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of people just say, oh, well, it's definitely, for sure. We are in the realm that we think if Bigfoot does exist, I'm not saying it does, but I'm not saying it's impossible, but if it does exist, we're kind of thinking that it might not just be flesh and blood. It might be an interdimensional creature.
Yep.
All right. That can come and go, blah, blah, blah. But when I see these people talk about their Bigfoot experiences, I have no doubt that they saw something.
Yep.
They don't know what it was. We don't know what it was. They can't describe
in
detail what it was, but they saw something and it shook them up and they're scared. So something was out there that they can't understand. And that kind of gets our interest too.
Well, and you know, Dee, you brought up a good point a while ago, and that's what science is supposed to do. And the thing is, no, you're right. It's not science's job to prove any of this stuff. The idea of paranormal is the fact that it can't be proven by science. It's the fact of science has hacked and hacked and hacked at it for long enough that they go, it's within the 3 to 5% anomaly that we just can't explain. And I'm looking for my book. There it is. I bought this series of books at the MUFON symposium a couple years ago. This is literally a scientific desk reference of strange phenomena. So swamp gas, fireballs in the sky, things going back to the 1600s, 1700s, articles about them. So science deals with phenomena fully. Yes. It's a part of their data set. They have to be able to remove the phenomena from a data set of science. So when there's something left over, that's when it's paranormal. Because, through the norms of science, we just don't know right now.
That's right. That's right.
So, it's very interesting. And that's what we've opened up our mind to, saying, it may not just be this or this. It might be a combination.
Yeah.
And nobody knows.
No, we're human. Yeah. There are things that that could be out there. We just can't. We don't have the capabilities to comprehend what it could be.
Yeah.
It could be alien. It could be terrestrial. It could be Bigfoot. Whatever. Paranormal. We just can't comprehend it because we are using our human thoughts that we're grown up with, that we're taught.
Well, it's kind of the way that the NASA UFO UAP panel put it in their second, where they literally went to NOAA and other governmental agencies and were like, listen, if you have satellites that see into these ranges that can do this stuff, feel free to get with us. We would love to compare and contrast data with you. We would love to give you dates and look at data that you may have on certain dates in certain locations, just because you were shooting maps for AccuWeather and you can go back in the server and get that data, but you may have instrumentation that we weren't looking for. And the fact is, we're dealing with an anomaly that we don't even know what to look for. Like, hey, if you're trying to detect a muon or a quark, we got a known quantitative here, and we at least have some calculations as to what we should be building a sensor to look for.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about a ghost, we don't really have any Egon Spengler calculations where it's like, I think we could indefinitely imprison a ghost. I think we could contain a ghost indefinitely with these numbers. Yeah. We don't have those numbers. You know,
we do not.
So
you can't quantify.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why we're here.
Well, we're trying to find out. Exactly. And especially when it comes to evidence and things like that, it's something that it's got to go through rigors. And it's something that I've kind of been on a pedestal about the last couple of years, is the difference between data and evidence, and the idea that, like, evidence is what you should be able to give your lawyer and be like, yeah, this should clear me, bud. Like, this should keep me out of prison right here.
You sound like you've had some experience.
A little bit. Right. I've definitely had things that were evidence in life. But that's just it. It's one of those, like, because I'm a believer, my realm of what should be evidence should be higher than the average bear. you know, than the average person that hasn't seen something strange. Like my experience professionally is an audio video engineer. I have for the last 30 years of my life almost edited and recorded audio and video. So I have seen and processed thousands of hours of footage, thousands of hours of audio, to the point that I can almost read WAVE file. Hear the words as I'm looking at it. When you get to that, it's different and you see things in a different way. And now, because of that, I have a different realm of expectation when it comes to something, you know?
The bar is set much higher.
Exactly. And much like you guys, once you've been through a good 100 investigations, things like that, been out, going out weekend warrior wise for, like you, Jimmy, for 20 years, now you're out doing it professionally because, you've got the time under your belt. You've got the investigations under your belt. You've got the years of properly examining data after you get home. And even out of that, understanding the fact that you may be out of that 20 years of regular investigation have maybe 8 to 10 clips, you know?
Yes,
like you're saying, you may go out and capture 20 hours of recording somewhere and get absolutely nothing.
Yeah, happens all the time.
Yeah.
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 But there may be one or two that spark your interest and you grab onto that and go,
Before we let you go, that brings us to another cause that we are behind as Curious Research and Curious Realm, and that is the world of citizen science. The turn of phrase I have is, as soon as you have experienced the paranormal and you questioned it, science began. The only question is whether or not you bought a ticket to the train. The train's left the station. Are you eating a Twix or do you have a ticket? Because you've already experienced and observed, and now you've questioned something. Like, that's the first two steps out of six. You're a third of the way there. You're already a scientist just by having your experience. So the idea of citizen science, the idea of even if you're out, let's say, taking 25 hours of video of Gettysburg, what a local college wildlife program may not have time to do is go up and set up a camera for 24 hours to film Gettysburg and get a wild cardinal count of the area. So making those bridge connections amongst scientific communities in your area, if you're out Sasquatching and you have 4 or 5 trail cams, contact your local wildlife department. Let them know, A, where you're Sasquatching, and B, that you have trail cam footage and pictures, and you would love to be able to share that with them for animal counts, deer counts, things like that. Like, you are now contributing into a scientific system that, come the day that you need something examined, A, now you have a connection. B, you've been shoveling them data. You know,
they're looking at you in a totally different light
than just somebody that goes, "Hey, man, I found this out in the middle of the woods."
That's a great idea, Chris.
So
you're a good guy. I'm glad we got to talk to you.
Well, it's one of those the world of paranormal is science. Anybody who says different, like we've been saying this whole episode, it absolutely is. They are rapidly converging right now, and we as investigators into the paranormal, into the esoteric, into the parapsychological, things like that, we have to be willing to meet them where they want to be met, you know. We have to be willing to write down the data that they want. The example I give is somebody who did wedding photography, or not photography, videography for years, is a picture is not worth 1,000 words. A picture is worth 1,000 words if you've been there. You take a picture of a wedding, show it to a 4-year-old that's never been to a wedding, and see if you don't have some explaining to do.
That's for sure.
So science looks at every picture as though they're a 4-year-old and says, explain to me the picture.
Yes.
Where was it taken? What were the circumstances? What direction was it taken? What time of day was it? What day was it? Mm-hmm. How many people were there? Like all of the data that yes. would go behind that picture. And we have to be ready to provide that. We have to write that down literally in the moment as it happens. You know, otherwise you come back after a 12-hour long investigation, you may not remember the details of when that picture was taken.
That's right. You know,
that kind of stuff. So,
yeah.
What kind of advice in the last 9-8 minutes here, as people that have been out doing this investigative work, working Goosebumps Paranormal for this long, what kind of advice would you give for those that are just getting started?
I would say, number one, never go alone.
Yeah.
Always have somebody with you because you never know what can happen. I mean, you can easily just walk around, twist your ankle or do something. And if you're out by yourself, you're in trouble. And you don't know what you get into when you're out there alone. You have no idea. Never go alone.
And always let somebody know where you're at. We should have taken that advice ourselves. The last book we wrote, the last chapter we put in was, don't do what we did.
Oh, we should probably tell them about our books.
Absolutely.
Weird, Spooky, Bizarre, we wrote the first one about some of our, about some of our investigations. It's all Pennsylvania.
That came out about three years ago, roughly. Yeah. It's all Pennsylvania, our own personal paranormal investigations. There's a lot of Gettysburg in there. If people like Gettysburg, they're really going to love this book.
Yeah.
It's and the way we wrote it is we bring the reader along as a like a virtual member of our group.
Oh,
they're
cool.
there with us, experiencing everything, and at the end, we let them draw their own conclusions.
It's very conversational. It's an easy read. It's just like we're talking to you now. There's no
a lot of pictures.
Yeah. Oh, that's my husband's fictional book that he wrote.
That was my very first book I wrote. Yeah. It's fictional, but it's paranormal.
In this one,
Weird, Spooky, Bizarre 2 just came out about a month and a half ago.
All right.
The last chapter we wrote, Don't Do What We Did.
Yeah.
Right.
So both these books are available on Amazon. If anybody wants to get them, get them on Amazon.
You know,
five-star.
That is something that whenever I speak to remote view, like at the Remote Viewing Association last year, that is one of the points that I brought up, is that our misses are just as important as our hits.
Learning how you approached
a situation wrong, how you set up gear wrong, things like that. Like there are literal books written on that and careers made on that in what I do for a living in audio video.
It's a big learning curve. Yeah. You know, every time you go out, it's a learning curve.
There is, especially when it comes to technology, you know, because there is a lot out there now. And as opposed to, I mean, you can attest to this, Jimmy. I was involved in paranormal societies 20 years ago. Even being able to pick up a decent EVP meter at the time was a good couple hundred bucks. You can pick up a green to red light EVP or EMF detector now
EMF.
$30-$40. It's incredible. Yeah. Now, granted, I am still a big fan of you use meters with numbers where you can zero them out, things like that, where you can, you know, make sure of those things. But what are some of the best practices that you can give people for using their equipment, things like that, before we let them go?
We love using the digital recorder.
Mm.
And the main thing is try not to bombard when you go somewhere. You ask a question and pause.
Yeah,
and wait.
Need to pause because you need to leave a space if an entity or something is going to answer. Leave a space, leave a blank so they can do that. So you can pick up on it. When you analyze this recording later, you have a space that you can actually listen to see if there was a response.
And you may not hear it yourself at live.
Yeah.
But,
you likely will not hear it live.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, make sure you leave space. Don't and try to debunk. That's our big thing is don't automatically assume if you see orbs that it's not just dust that was flying around the room and say, oh, you can't believe all the orbs.
We debunked so many orbs. I'm going to say, now this is me speaking. I'm not a big fan of orbs, but there are some that I can't explain. But there are some.
I will show you one that I show on air regularly here in the last couple minutes. This is one that I recorded. And this is the caveat that I give people when I say, be careful what you see on social media. Be careful how you see it. What you're seeing right now, if you're just a listener out there, it's a brightly colored orb, kind of a meniscus around the edge. It's undulating and moving. It's flashing colors. It's vacuous in the middle, big, empty black space. This would be a quintessential orb. What you're actively looking at in that video is that is the Dog Star Sirius out of focus in my telescope.
Really?
It was the third star that I was aligning my telescope to. So I was trying to catch it as it was going out of view. It was not focused yet, so I couldn't say, yes, lock on, because it wasn't in focus. So I was busy chasing it. My telescope, that is the Dog Star Sirius. It naturally changes colors. The undulations that you are seeing are from the layers of aberration of temperature in the atmosphere. The motion you're seeing
is one of the brightest stars out there.
It's literally the actual motion of the star, just exaggerated by 10 times because of the size of my telescope. So same exact, if you subtracted that and divided it by 10, that is the actual speed at which it was moving in the sky and the time that it took me to videotape that. It's a prime example of you see something without the data, you see the picture without the 1,000 words, you can assume a lot of things, you know?
Absolutely.
You have to dig more, you have to want to dig more, and you've got to be willing, as they say in science, to kill your darlings, to let your hypothesis go to the wayside when D goes, hey, man, I don't think that what you're looking at is what you think it is. You have to be willing to let that happen. So thank you guys for your time tonight.
You were awesome. Thanks, Chris.
Absolutely.
We really appreciate it.
It was a great time chatting with y'all. Before we let you go, one last time, let everybody know where they can go to keep up with everything that is Goosebumps Paranormal Society right there in Pennsylvania.
Oh, we have a website. We have a Facebook page. Instagram. Our books are available on Amazon.
And our tagline is contact us when they contact you.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time tonight. I greatly appreciate it. Appreciate
you
awesome.
Your candid
you, candor and your very, very candid answers. So take care. I'll be in touch with links, all that kind of good stuff. And we look forward
Sounds
to
good.
Having you on again sometime.
Thank you.
Awesome. So all right. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take
Y'all
care.
Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.
All right. What an incredible time with Jimmy and D, folks. While you are online checking out everything from Goosebumps Paranormal Society at goosebumpsparanormalsociety.weebly.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Research. CuriousResearch.org/store is where you can find the Curious Research store. That's where you can get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. If you are a researcher in the world of paranormal UFOs, cryptids, ghosts, ghost hunting, stop on by and get your field observation and encounter log. It is your chance to be able to write down your data in a scientific way as your investigation happens. Included there in the store is also tons of lab-grade equipment, amazing things that are field-tested, great stuff. Stop on by and check that out. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend and remote viewer, head of PSI, Lynn Buchanan. We will be talking about the world of remote viewing, the remote viewing program that the government led for so many years, as well as remote viewing alien civilizations and Mars. We will get into that and more with Lynn Buchanan right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO-UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Hello, everybody, and thank you for hanging on through that quick commercial break. And speaking of thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am for things like travel anxiety, general health, well-being, things like that, stop on by TrueHempScience.com. They have some amazing products in their line. Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science create all of their products through a spigeric process, using every part of the hemp plant. From the leaves, buds, stems, seeds, roots, everything is used, combusted, reused, combusted again, and that process repeated until an amazing spigeric product results from it, complete with terpene profiles and all. Stop on by and check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to find these amazing things. Curious 7 is the code that you want to use to save 7%, or yes, save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more. While you are online checking out everything from True Hemp Science, everybody, make sure to stop on by crviewer.com. That is the website of our guest in this segment, the amazing Lynn Buchanan. He is, of course, one of the famed remote viewers in the government Stargate remote viewing program. He has carried on the world of controlled remote viewing through the military protocols for many, many years. He is my remote viewing teacher. I took classes through Lynn's program. It's absolutely awesome. Welcome back to the show, Lynn Buchanan. How are you, my friend?
Hey, thank you for inviting me back.
Always great having you on the show. We always have an awesome conversation. I've had the great pleasure of sitting back with you during my trip to Roswell recently. We took a trip out to Alamo Gordo, had dinner with you, things like that. And I am greatly looking forward to seeing you again in person at the upcoming IRVA conference in October. Right. That's happening in Cloudcroft, New Mexico. And it's going to be awesome. It's going to be great. Lynn, before we get into the nitty gritty of remote viewing, things like that, you know, there probably more than anything, I get asked about remote view. I get asked by a lot of people about UFOs, ghosts, things like that. Oh, yeah. But more than anything, because people know that I am a remote viewer, remote viewing comes up more than anything. And especially things like the Stargate program, stuff like that. Yeah. Now, just to clear up any kerfuffle that may be out there, misunderstandings that people may have, how did you
first... There's a lot of it.
there's a whole lot. There's a whole lot. And that's what I tell people all the time, is there are a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of misgivings to this.
Yeah.
How did you first come to be involved with the Stargate remote viewing program, Lynn?
General Stubblebine, head of the Intelligence and Security Command... Excuse me, General Stubblebine, head of the Intelligence and Security Command, had been looking for people who use intuition in its different forms, hoping to use it for military means. This was in response to the Russians already doing it. And an incident happened. These incidents have happened all my life, and an incident happened, a very large one, over in Augsburg, Germany, where I was stationed, and just happened to have one of the officers that he had trained to spot these things. And I got reported. A couple of months later, General Stubblebein came out to install a new commander at the field station where I was working. And he called me in, and he interviewed me in a scary way, and pulled me into the remote viewing unit.
So this program was already pre-existing. It was already there. Protocols were in place by the time that you came to be a part of it.
Right. It had existed for about 10 years before I got there.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. I wasn't aware that it was 10 years in that you came into the program. What was your experience onboarding
into the program?
Well,
basically, let's see, it was more than 10 years. It was probably about 18, yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. Wow, that's incredible. And what was your experience onboarding into the program? I mean, is that something, because, there are, of course, programs like, hey, I was a seminarian for the Catholic Church. Like, from the day that you fill out the form to apply, they are watching you. They are culling your skill set. They are seeing what you're good at. Like myself, I was a confessor. They wanted me to work with youth, and I have a way of disarming people and having them talk about things that sometimes they're literally like, "Oh my God, I can't believe I just told you that." It just comes out, you know, so like they see those traits and they really, really kind of veer you toward that kind of service. Was that the case with you in remote viewing?
Well, sort of the case. They gave me a briefing. Joe McMonagle and one other person came out and gave me a briefing in Augsburg. And when I finally reported to the unit, I finally reported to the unit, they read me on. Mm. Reading you on to a classified program, especially what they call a SAP, Special Access Program, is a thing where they give you a paper. They don't tell you out loud. They give you a paper that tells what the unit really does, not what they tell the public it does. And I read this paper, and I kind of grinned. I thought, you know, come on, the military doesn't do this. Mm. But I signed it. And over the next couple of days, I watched the other guys, and they were doing it. And it was just an amazing thing to me. They were doing the remote viewing. They would sit down at a desk and do the work of a ground agent over in another country, you know, and get the information. And just fantastic work. And it wasn't called Project Stargate at the time, but when I went in, it was called Centerlane. But I joined it. It was the most interesting job I think I've ever had in my life. And I firmly believe one of the most interesting jobs in the military.
I can imagine.
Just fantastic job.
Well, you know, much like, I mean, even just a generalized intelligence analyst, Lynn, you know, the things that they get to do, the technology that they get to work with, even just loops and photographs and examining things like that.
Well, I had been before that, I had been working on other things than that had nothing whatever to do with the remote viewing, but I had been in the intelligence field for many years. So,
and what was, are you allowed to speak about your position in the military prior to your service in the Stargate program?
I was my official title was Russian Technology Specialist.
Okay.
And,
so
I won't talk anymore about that.
So, yeah, basically reverse engineering concepts and things that are brought in.
No. Just
okay.
Just accept the title for what it is.
Other things, then. I will. Well, and the reason I bring that up is because, you know, once again, the idea of being read in, that is something that we discuss on this show regularly, whether it's with our security person, Mike Turber, or even whenever we discuss people like Hal Puthoff, and the idea of even though he isn't directly involved in these programs necessarily anymore, he's still read in on the programs. Because the work that he did 20, 30, almost 40 years ago is still fully relevant to them. And the only way that you can, the only way as these programs become declassified, like things like Stargate, stuff like that, the only way he cannot say anything is to be read in on the new version, you know? So it's a pretty common practice.
Even now, the stuff that we did when I was in the service, I try to be very careful about what has been declassified, what hasn't.
That's right.
I try to keep up with it so that I don't say the wrong thing at the wrong time in the wrong place, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize something that we talk about with Dr. John Hall regularly. There is a Defense Intelligence Office that, if you're writing a book like you're in the midst of right now, things like that, like there are things that you have to pass by them, even as a civilian. You can't just go out writing about that. Find out there's going to be trouble.
The Defense Intelligence Agency is the military arm of the CIA.
Yeah, precisely. And I mean, so much to the point that even whenever I've been at CES, one of my favorite things is to go down to what's called Eureka Park, where all these people just, a lot of the things there are mock-ups, ideas, like they are still in the infantile phases of these technologies. But set up down there is DARPA and people like that, and the Defense Intelligence Agency. And my favorite thing is there's somebody there who can talk to you about your business and onboarding, and let's get you some clearances, and let's make sure your stuff's security is proper so that, you know, you can get in line. But there ain't nobody who can talk to a person with a microphone.
Oh, no.
when you go up to be like, hey, I'd love to talk with you about what DARPA does. I am absolutely not allowed to, I'm not allowed to
now
do
listen,
that.
No matter how well you hide a recorder in your body.
Oh, they'll find it.
They know it's there.
they know it's there. Just by your line of questioning.
You can hide it where the sun don't shine and they know it's there.
But I always find it funny that, like, there it is, like, on public display, no doubt. You know, I mean, even this show right now, Lynn, as it goes out live, is going out on Facebook, and they got some of their initial round of funding from InQtel, which is the financial arm of the CIA that looks into future looking technologies, things like that.
Yeah.
Now, let's kind of shift the focus here. We've talked about the beginnings, how you got involved with remote viewing. Once you left the program, Lynn, what was it like for you as
retired,
a remote viewer, but as a career military person?
Well, I retired from the military. That's how I left the unit. I was to turn around and go back as a civilian. And the director at the time called down to the DIA and chewed them out for not being quicker at getting me back, and ticked them off. And so 8 months later, I got my clearance to go back. And by that time, they were disbanding the unit. And so I stayed at the DIA for several more years, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I tell people all the time, one of the things that people bring up to me is like, well, nothing good came from the Stargate program. Nothing, like, there wasn't anything found.
Absolutely wrong.
Exactly. I'm like, number
absolutely
one.
Absolutely wrong.
You normally don't fund a program for almost 20 years when there's nothing being garnered from it. Number one.
Yeah, and the thing was, we never had more than a one-year contract.
Yeah.
And every single year, you know,
And that's what I tell people is, like, make no mistake, they fought tooth and nail annually for their funding. But they were an efficacious program. There was good intelligence, all kinds of things.
Yeah, actually, we didn't.
Oh, really?
We didn't have to fight for our funding. There was one year when a senator came in, and I think it was Paul Smith. Paul Smith and I. He came in and he said, "I don't know if I want to fund this, vote to fund this or not." And he said, "I want to see what you do." And he said, "I have in my briefcase a target picture, and it's a classified site, and I haven't seen the picture. I haven't even know which classified site it is. I had somebody else pick it, put it in a sealed envelope, and it's in my briefcase, and I'm going to hang on to it. So you can't believe me for information because I don't know what it is and all that." So he went over. they assigned a number to it. You know, this project so-and-so. And then we sat down and did the target. And afterwards, he was back talking to our director, and he said, "Personally, I'm totally underwhelmed. I was expecting to see some psychic thing and all this, and I saw two guys sitting at a table just joking, and every now and then one of them writes something down." And our director said it was the gutsiest thing he ever did. He said, "Here's what they wrote down. Take the target out of your briefcase and see."
Wow.
And this senator sat there reading the transcript and looking at the picture saying, damn, you know?
Yeah.
We got funded for another year.
Well, and I tell people all the time, much like high school, much like college, I am a solid C student when it comes to remote viewing. I am no amazing phenom. I have seen amazing phenoms at work. I've seen some people that get incredible detail in their imagery and in their things that come through. And it's, to me, it's fascinating the fact of, like you say all the time, you don't have to be psychic to remote view. We're all partially psychic. You don't have to be a modern Blavatsky or anything like that to be able to do
it.
Like my brother took the class. You met him in Alamogordo. He took the class with Michelle Fried and Carl McClellan from Vantage Point Remote Viewing. And in all of a couple of days, he had some great sessions, some amazing sessions with some really, really good data. And it's
one
really...
One time the question came down from above, can you teach this to anybody? And so we went down to Milperson, Military Personnel Center, and said, the next person who comes up for a reassignment anywhere, just give us our name. Give us the name. And they did. And it was this female officer from, I forget where her last assignment was, but they talked to her and she said, well, I'll give it a try, mainly because she wanted to be in the D.C. area. And so she had never had even the slightest psychic experience in her life. And we sat there and taught her the Inga Swan technique. She actually turned out to be one of our best remote viewers.
Wow. Now, let's start taking people through a typical session, specifically a controlled remote viewing session, because there are numerous methodologies to remote viewing, but CRV is very specific in the way that it operates and in the modality in which it uses. So,
And I'm not just prejudiced about this, but I keep the database, and I've seen other, and what Inga Swann invented or developed is the best there is, without any doubt, and it's provable. Yeah, our results can be better than anybody else's. Yeah.
And it really is, as I tell anybody, whether it's on this show or outside of this show, if you want to talk about anything that has been laboratory seen when it comes to parapsychology, it's remote viewing. Mm-hmm. And I mean tested to the point of people playing with quantum sensors inside of RF, because somebody was like, oh, we'll just put the, and this was all of a couple weeks ago, somebody I know was like, well, just put the target in a Faraday cage. And I'm like, that does nothing. Like that. Copper mesh is going to stop you seeing through the fabric of the universe, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, you put the target in a Faraday cage, you can say, oh, well, you're reading the mind of somebody who knows what it is. We put the viewers in a Faraday cage with no contact with anybody else. They do a perfect job, you know.
Yeah. And once again, there was the case of it was Ingo that was playing with the gravitometer. Correct.
Yeah.
That was once again in a Faraday cage at SRI.
Yeah.
So it was
60 feet underground.
Yeah.
And shielded, you know. Yeah. And they asked him to view it, and when he did, he affected it radically. And every time he viewed it, and finally they said, you can't do that anymore. It's messing with all of our stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. There are other experiments that rely on that.
Yeah, they gave me the accelerator at SRI at Stanford, and I viewed it, and they moved me into the beam there, and I felt all these particles, and I started deflecting the particles into the walls, and the alarm went off, and down at the other end, and they shut the thing off immediately, and I said, well, surreptitiously find out if that actually happened.
Mm.
And they said, well, we're not letting them know that we did that to them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But came back a little bit later and they said, yeah, it happened.
Wow. Wow. And the fact that you are able to not only view a particle beam like that, but actively interact with it. Affect it in its course is remarkable.
This is one of the things about the Swan method is that at a high, very high level, you can interact with the target and affect it.
Wow. Now, once again, take the audience real quick through a typical session, Lynn. How does a session begin?
Yeah.
How does the data process work?
They give you a totally unpolluted cue. Who knows what the target is? They'll say, this is project 250704. Question number 3, what's the answer? And you sit down and you start the process and you come up with the answer. And then, of course, that's scored against the feedback. The score goes into the database according to the different aspects. Did you get the color right? Did you get the shape right? Did you get the sounds right? The taste and all this. And the database over a period of time will tell you what you're good at, what you're not good at, so that then you can hone your training to take your weaknesses and try to strengthen them and all that. And also so that they can say, Oh, Lynn is good at this aspect. We'll task him with that aspect of the target. He's really bad at this other aspect, so we're going to task somebody else with that aspect of the target.
Yeah.
And you can put a team together, and with viewers who have 70 to 80% accuracy, by tasking them individually with this for their strengths, you can come up with 90 to 95% accuracy on a target. Yeah.
And once again, the idea, much like any good scientific experiment, something like that, you are using numerous sensors, numerous different methods to gather data at the
Oh,
same
yeah.
time. And but
Yeah.
once again, the idea that some people are better at things than other people. Some people are better at object shapes. Some people are more synesthetic and can pick up more
Well, sadly
colors,
enough, we're all
things like that.
human.
So none of us is the perfect instrument, I don't think,
No.
but I think each one of us, like you're saying, has a different aspect of that
Sure.
and can tune in a different
Different
way.
talent, and each one is interested in different aspects of the target, and so that's what they're going to do best. Yeah.
Now, how do you differentiate between hit and miss in a session, Lynn?
From the feedback.
Okay. Now explain to the audience what that feedback session is.
Okay. The normal psychic and the other basic forms of remote viewing, you'll say there's red at the target. Okay. And poof, there's red at the target. You're right. In CRV, we get details. And you say there's this mechanism and it's over on the right and it's red. You look at the feedback and the mechanism over at the right is green, but it's next to this big red wall. Well, you got it wrong. You put the red in the wrong place, so you got it wrong. So it's a demanding thing that demands your best skill. And once you, we find that once you demand a viewer to give their best, they're going to give their best.
Now, would that be, I guess, through means of hypnotic suggestion? How would that work? And I guess that's a question that would come to mind anyway. Is this in
No.
any way related to hypnosis?
No, it's not. And in fact, we've tried, people under hypnosis, and it retards the process. They have some success, but it retards the accuracy and the amount of information you get and all that. And you're so open to the suggestion of the monitor
Exactly.
that it really pollutes the session. No, the thing is, you do the controlled remote viewing in a normal state. This is what the senator said, I'm totally underwhelmed. These two guys were sitting at the table just
Talking.
talking and joking, and every now and then one of them would write somebody down, something down.
And I think that that's a big miscommunication and misconception. I think people are once again looking for that Madame Blavatsky session.
Oh,
You know,
yeah, they're
they're
looking
looking
for
they're
the
looking for
woo-woo.
yeah, no, they're looking for a spiritualism session where somebody's going to sit
Looking
there. I
for the
mean, don't
mystic,
get me
yeah.
wrong, I sit here with a crystal in my hand the whole time that I talk on this show.
I
However,
don't have one, yeah.
that's what they're looking for, is somebody with the crystal ball appearing. And what's interesting is that it really does, remote viewing itself really does break down some of the many barriers that are there in actual physics, Lynn. One of them that I speak about regularly on the show is time. Just that made up agreement that 60 seconds is a minute, 60 minutes is an hour.
Listen,
That only exists
we
here.
found out in the remote viewing, we found out very quickly everything you were ever taught about time.
Yeah,
it's wrong.
Yeah. And that's just it. Once you get that concept, and it really ahas to you that, wait a minute, everything is now. There.
Well, you know, this may be a helpful hint for any psychic out there. Okay, the conscious mind works best present tense. Okay, the subconscious mind also works best present tense, but it can go anywhere in space and time.
Yeah.
And so if you say, I want to know what happened to my Aunt Maud 30 years ago, and you give that to a psychic, they'll do their stuff and they'll get whatever they can with their talent, you know?
Sure.
You tell that same psychic, 30 years ago, something happened to my Aunt Maud. Please move to that time. And now, what are you seeing happening?
Yeah.
The subconscious moves to that time. That time is now your subconscious mind's present tense. And you ask, what is happening now? And you'll get more information that will be more accurate.
And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up that link of conscious subconscious, which make no mistake, everybody, is a link. Like, there is a link there between the two, and you kind of, it's interesting, because as somebody who spent years studying ecstatic prayer, things like that, being able to stop, drop into a state of ecstatic prayer, being able to drop into a state of meditation, that is way harder for me now in life.
Mm-hmm.
However, utterly unnecessary for remote viewing. And it's fascinating to me, because whereas the others are very much a putting on of blinders and a focusing right here and subtracting the exterior, subtracting outside stimuli, subtracting stray thought, and just hyper-focusing on a perfectly still moment, that is far from what you're supposed to be doing in remote. That's like the antithesis of remote viewing.
In controlled remote viewing, yeah.
Specifically, and the way I put it to people, even whenever I practice without the same controls as in CRV land, I still akin it to, I give my monkey a typewriter. I'm not trying to silence the monkey mind in my head like I am when I'm trying to, like, Buddhist meditate. You know, I'm trying to write down what the monkey's saying and everything the monkey's saying in as great detail as I can, you know?
Yeah.
And it's interesting, because once again, once you learn that disassociation and to let your subconscious truly free, the way I put it last year, right after I spoke on the remote viewing cruise, the first question somebody asked me was why I liked remote viewing so much. And I was like, because as an American male, I get to write down my feelings and impressions on a piece of paper, unabridged and unquestioned. I get to write down everything that I think and feel about a situation. And nobody's going to judge me about what I thought or felt about that situation. And there's something special there. That idea of learning to get in touch with those deep, deep feelings. Like even the session that I did during Carl McClellan and Michelle Fried's training for Vantage Point, that was the first time I'd done a health reading where I had purposefully read another person. Wasn't the health reading. This was the missing person. We did like a missing person case, and you're always the advocate of, like, you think you want to go out and find missing people until they start haunting your brain all the time.
Oh yeah.
And the target was Sharon Tate.
That was
the target was Sharon Tate from the Manson murders. Oh my God. The overwhelming feelings that I got during that set. Like, I openly cried a couple of times while I was while I was giving my feedback, like in my summary to the class. Like, I had to hold myself. Like, I openly wept. And it's amazing to see the synergy with which your body reacts to these things.
That's right.
Because it's not fake. It's utterly real.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm.
So, how do we, I guess, begin to explain that to the average person, Lynn? The connection in that way.
Well, the explanation sounds a lot woo woo in itself. Okay?
Sure.
You have your conscious mind, you have your subconscious mind, and your subconscious mind, in theory, doesn't have access to all of space and time. It has access to the collective consciousness. And, you know, psychiatrists say the collective unconscious. No, the collective conscious is very conscious.
Yeah.
And it seems to have access to that, and thereby can pick up, can ask it questions and pick up any answers and convey those back to your conscious mind. And and along the line you were talking about, people come to me and they say, well, I want to learn this so I can bring home missing kids. And I'll warn them. I said, you're going to access these missing kids, and some of them have been raped repeatedly, murdered, used for slaves, killed, dismembered, spread across acres of land. Do you really want to experience that?
Yeah.
And they say, well, no, I just want to bring home a missing kid. And I said, so do I. But you have to take training. You have to learn, first of all, and this is one thing we do in the remote viewing, you have to learn, first of all, how to protect yourself as the viewer.
That's right. That's right. How do you
begin? And, you know, in the military, we face some horrendous targets.
Oh, I'm sure.
We had to protect ourselves. And the first thing of protection is you observe, you don't participate. And, and the minute I see a student starting to participate in the target, I'll break the session and tell them, bring them back out of it and stop the session and say, no, wait a minute. Let's review what you've gotten so far. And by the way, would you like to go to lunch? And, you know, and just
distraction.
Get them out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because there is a beautiful thing. Hi, Tomi, if you're out there listening. Tomi is my monitor for my training that I was going through with you, things like that, Lynn. And that relationship between monitor and viewer, I think, is something that is very, very special. Very special.
Very.
I think any good viewer can be a good monitor, you know, but even sitting in the session that I sat in.
Any good trained viewer can be a good monitor.
And even some of my sessions, like, it was very interesting on the cruise to see, I had Angela Thompson Smith as my monitor during one of the sessions. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, well, you're training with Lynn with CRV. So let's, and it took her a second to get back into the habit of protocols and stuff like that. But it wasn't until that moment that I realized that, like, hey, wait a minute. There's a couple of these protocols that are kind of getting in my way sometimes as well. You know, so I've kind of taken a very personal affectation to that. And adapted some things and some techniques for my own use, you know, but that's just it. The process becomes very, very personal.
Oh, it does. And the protocols are partially there to protect you as the viewer
Well, and
from the world is not a butterflies and flower place,
That's right. That's right. And like you said, especially in the military, when you're talking about, because you guys helped find hostages, y'all, all kinds of things. So, y'all definitely got the psychic impressions of some horrible, horrible actions in the world. And yeah, you do have to prepare yourself for that. You do have to steel yourself against that. How do you begin to teach somebody that means of protection, Lynn, to psychically protect themselves, to and
You
even
teach it
that
slowly.
discernment of
Yeah,
good
you
versus
teach it
bad in a
slowly
session.
and gradually. You teach it slowly and gradually according to the person themselves.
Okay.
So it's always customized training. There is, once you start learning CRV, there's definitely a magician's apprentice syndrome where you want to go out and save the world, and you have to sometimes just hold a student back and say, wait a minute, you're not ready for this yet,
Yeah.
So the thing of being a CRV trainer is a serious thing. And I see a lot of people out here on the internet saying, I'm a CRV trainer. And they say, I'm teaching the stuff that was classified in the military. Listen, anytime someone says, I'm a trainer of remote viewing and training what was classified in the military, stay away from them. It was never classified in the military. The fact that the military was using it, that's what was classified. The technique was never classified.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's
And
a.
so when somebody starts talking about the secret technique in the military, hey, just steer clear of them. They don't know what they're talking about.
Well, and that really does speak to something, Lynn, that we talk about regularly on this show. Because as you know, I love rabbit holing on topics, things like that, folks. But demystification is what this
Oh,
show
yeah.
is about. True understanding, open-hearted,
Yeah.
open-minded understanding of a topic, and that begins with the experiencer and moves on from there. But
Yeah.
when it comes to this stuff, it really there's a shady snake oil world with all of it.
Oh, yeah.
Everything from remote viewing to UFO UAPs to, hey, let me give you a hypnotic regression session for your abduction, to hey, let me take you out on a Bigfoot hunt, to all kinds of things. It's crazy. Like, one of the things I bring up on the show all the time is Corey Good. Like,
One of the
it's.
neatest I've one of the neatest I've heard lately is, I will regress. I will tell you your past lives. Okay.
Yeah.
On something like that, you can go into historical records and take a look. Now then, there are people out there saying, I will tell you about your future lives after you die here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. And there are people falling for it.
Well, and that brings up an important question too, especially whenever we say, like, time is more than relative, when it goes beyond relative when it comes to remote viewing. It ceases to be relative when it comes to remote viewing. And with that concept in mind, of course there's that plus minus binary option remote viewing, the idea of who's going to win, the Eagles or the Giants, things like that. Who's going to win the election, the Republicans or the Democrats locally, things like that. Even calling casino numbers, calling wheels, calling horses. There's a
Now
whole
you can do
predictive
that.
element to these things. But
Yeah, you can do that with high accuracy.
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The thing is, How do you know it's true? Okay, how can you depend on it?
Yeah.
Well, you wait for feedback, all right? And so what you do is you try the deck of cards. Okay, what color is the next card? Okay, you're predicting one few seconds into the future.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you predict something for tomorrow, and then you predict something for next week. But you keep data. Okay.
Yeah.
And that data will give you a dependability rating. When you get a dependability rating, then if you view your own future or your somebody else's future and you have a high dependability rating, I will tend to depend on it.
Sure.
If you just have nothing, you know, but you got to prove it. I know one time I got a task, and all I was told was the location. And I got a really sandy location with rocks and sand and this scoop sticking up out of the ground. That's what I turned in. 12 years later.
Wow.
I have a dog.
I know.
12 years later. Let me go close to the door. Chewy, stop.
It's okay. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
We don't. 12 years
later. I got a picture from the tasker that was taken by the Mars rover, and there's a rocky spot in a sandy clearing, and there's a scoop sticking up out of the ground.
Wow.
It's not man-made.
Interesting. Now, that of course brings us to the last part of my questions for this evening, which can get a little odd, Len, and that is the idea of things that have been remote viewed, specifically things that you've remote viewed, like you said, Mars.
Yeah.
What did you see while you were there on Mars? What were your Martian sessions like?
Back before the Sedona region ever became public. Okay.
Yeah.
They had highly accurate pictures.
Yep.
They can read your license plate from 250 miles in the air.
Yeah.
In Earth air, as messed up as it is, you think they can't? Well, they can only get a blurry picture of a mountain, and you know, in Mars.
Yeah.
It's just not true. And they had accurate pictures, but that will probably never come out to the public. But I was given a target, and there's a thing in CRV called perfect site integration. It's you've heard of probably bilocation. Bilocation, yes, is where you're at the target, experiencing it, and at the table at the same time reporting it. Beyond that is perfect site integration, where you're so at the target that the table around you, the monitor and everything else, it disappears. You can't tell you're not at the target. And one of the times when this happened to me, I didn't know what the target was, had no idea, but I was in this cavernous place underground, and I won't go into what I was reporting what I saw there, but there were these sort of like steps going up to an opening way up high. And my monitor said, well, go up there and find out what's here. And just personal habit, always take my shoes off to view.
Mm.
So viewing my soft feet. And so I found myself standing in some sand in a long hallway. And down at the end of the hallway was an opening. I went down to the opening, and it was open. It wasn't blocked. And leaned out, and I was in this building that, well, I was in this eroded place that was tilted back. And I looked out, and the sky was a different color. The sun was out, but not nearly as bright as it should be and smaller than it should be. And I could see these eroded places around. I sketched them and placed them there. And, you know, and about that time, I said, "What?" And that immediately threw me back to the disc, and I was out of there.
Wow.
And, it was some months later that I went and was in this secure facility and saw one of the pictures. And I said, "What is this?" And they said, "Well, that's a region of Mars." And I saw this picture that of a mountain that looked sort of like a face, you know.
Mm.
And I looked at the things around it, and they were placed exactly where I had seen. And I asked about, you know, Mars, the temperature, the color of the sky, and everything else. And it was what I had seen. And so this brought up to me a question that I don't think anybody really has the answer to. If I get up from here and walk to the kitchen and come back, that's in my memory as a real thing.
Yeah.
If I walked down a hallway in a pyramid on Mars and leaned out and looked and saw what was there, then how real is that thing? To me, it's absolutely real. And we have the feedback to prove it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people hallucinate, and to them, it's very real. And yet, when you look at the feedback, it's all imaginary.
Yeah.
But in this PSI experience, perfect size integration, are you really there? Your mind is there. But you know, I always say, yeah, I've been to Mars, didn't get the T-shirt.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, that idea of, once again, even when you start looking at the concept of the holographic universe and all of this being an agreed-upon illusion, Lynn, yep. You know, that right now, myself, you, and my brother, via distance, are sharing an electron shell because we're 90% empty space contained by a quantum field. You know, those things are huge concepts. But when you start thinking about that and the idea of, like, wait a minute, if I'm 90% empty space, then so is my brain. Where am I? Like, where am I as a consciousness? Yeah. You know,
excuse me, can you hold it? I'm going to close both doors to get the show out of here.
No, absolutely. Right, absolutely. No worries. It really is one of those interesting facts of, are we a non-local consciousness? Are we an agreed upon consciousness? And if that's the case, then, you know, the idea that all of these things, once again, are occurring in real time and are real, you know, no different than any psychosomatic illness or the raising of blisters through belief, or even the psychosomatic illness that somebody can pick up through believing things from social media. You know, it's really interesting the way that our physicality is affected by our mentality, and the way that these two worlds, physical and mental, marry together and are seen together and experienced together, you know, because the question does come to bear. Are we all there? Are we all together? are we as put together as we like to think we are, you know?
Sometimes people tell me I'm not older, you know.
But in all reality, it does bring about the question of what is real? At what point do you consider something real? And that's why I will say forever and always, Lynn, that, like, I will believe the experiencer until proven otherwise. I have had situations of bilocation in my life where that is quite literally what sent me to the seminary, was an experience of religious bilocation, where I was in two locations at the same time. It may someday be proven that that experience was a petty mal seizure, what have you, through other science. But until then, and even after then, I still had a religious experience. Like, that doesn't remove the way it made me feel. It doesn't change the way it opened and changed my paradigm.
That's right, yeah.
So, we have to be willing to consider those things. We have to be willing to take those things into the data set whenever we look at this stuff. And whenever we consider the idea of viewing, as you said, viewing reality, you know, is that viewing reality? Mm-hmm. Is it reality? I would tend to think, feedback or not, yes, it is. Because even my night terrors that I have, whether they're real or not, like, they affect me. Like, I remember them.
Yeah, you know? And they're real to you.
And they're real to me. So whether the rest of the world believes in my night terrors or not, they can, no offense, rest of the world, you can go screw.
That's right.
Pardon my French. But they're real to me, and it happens to me. You know, so until proven otherwise, that is how I accept it. And I will always say, people like you, people who have remote viewed alien civilizations, have remote viewed other locations. Mm-hmm. You know, it's I would venture to say, yes, it's absolutely real until, once again, proven otherwise.
Yeah. Well, when we viewed the alien bases on Earth, Skip Atwater took the time to go out and do the research to get some feedback. Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's get into that. Let's spend the last few minutes on that real quick, Lynn. Because that's a big tater to just kind of pull out of a sack on the street corner and not talk about, you know? you just said that a group of viewers remote viewed alien bases here on Earth. What were your findings? What were your experiences during those sessions, Lynn?
Okay. Pat Price, who is one of the original people in this whole project way back when in the 60s, viewed, just sort of figuring out what was going on, you know, just as a gimmick, sort of, to see if there were any alien bases on the Earth, and he found four. And the one in Australia, when he started viewing it, they let him know that they knew he was there. And that scared him to the point where he backed off and quit and wouldn't do it anymore. And we did those over the years, you know, just keeping up sort of a checking in on them. And we'd also do them for just a test, you know, practice target or whatever. And they were never tasked to us by the powers that be that come down, you know. And so we've just sort of kept a running track of it. And when I got my tasking on that, I did three of the four bases and found the basic, you know, the thing. I did not do the one in the Pyrenees, but I did the one in Zimbabwe, the one in Alaska, and the one in Australia. And got the material. Everything matched except the one in Alaska. The activity that's going on there has changed over the years, not only my viewing, but other people's viewings too. And so we sort of keep track on that one. But Ingo and Pat Price both said, oh, there are a lot of other bases, undersea bases, underground bases and all that. But those are the four that we've focused on. We've seemed to find that the one in Zimbabwe is a repair shop. The one in Mount Hayes in Alaska seems to be a, sort of an eavesdropping intelligence gathering places for the ETs watching the Earth.
Okay.
And the one in Australia seems to be the port of entry for friendly ETs coming to the planet. They seem to report there first and then go out across the planet. And so it's sort of a airport type thing.
Wow. That's fascinating. And even just to think about the fact that all of these bases are interconnected, all used for different purposes, by various species.
Yeah. On the one in Australia, when I viewed it, I had the PSI experience. And just immediately, they let me know that they knew I was there.
I was just about to ask.
And yeah, they did. And the thing is, part of the protocols of CRV, controlled remote viewing, is not only protecting yourself, but protecting yourself from being viewed.
Sure.
Or from being noticed. The reasoning for that was, let's say you've got a guard dog walking around a secure facility and you're a psychic and you start viewing it or doing your magic, whatever you do, and the dog alerts. Okay. The guard may not alert, but the guard dog walking with him alerts.
Yeah.
He reports that. Okay. And these other countries, they don't have the qualms about psychic stuff that we do. And that gets reported. And the next day they say, oh, we've been spied on. Let's change to plan B. And so all the information the psychic or the remote viewer got is suddenly worthless.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. With CRV, the protocols will help you never get caught. And so the information you get, the guard dog never alerts. Nobody senses you being there. It never gets reported. And so plan A doesn't get changed. And sure enough, the information you give is still accurate.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this is part of the intelligence gathering process. Sort of the idea of fish through water, you know?
Yeah.
Fish through water, never leave any evidence that you were ever there.
Well, and, you know, that brings up something, because we've talked about how a session begins. We've talked about its military uses, mm-hmm. its ability for gathering intelligentsia, or human, as it may be called in many circles.
Yeah.
We've talked about the way that these readings affect people, things like that. And the protocols of protecting yourself, not only during a session, but like you just said, from being seen during a session, especially by things mm-hmm. like an alien intelligence, that kind
from
of
being
stuff.
Detected, yeah.
How do you go about, I guess, that brings us to the question of interference and doing something, you know, like when the alien sees you, are like, do you push a button on the way out of the room? Are you supposed to interfere with the world around you while you're there?
Yeah, they're in Mount Zeo in Australia. They let me know that they knew I was there, and they said, it's okay. Go ahead and look around, you know.
Interesting.
And so I did. I drew sketches. I interacted and all this other stuff. But one time, I got out of structure, okay? It's my own fault. I got out of structure, and it was a practice session. The target was this museum somewhere, I forget where. And generally, you view a static moment, usually the static moment of the feedback, okay, while you're in practice. And so I was in this museum, I was looking in this case, and there were all these ancient weapons and all this other stuff, and I was looking around, everybody was frozen, and I looked over to my left, and there was this young Oriental girl who was looking straight at me. And I thought, oh, coincidence and all that. And then I turned back and I said, wait a minute, she was looking at me. I turned back. I saw her turn and disappear. And so I told my monitor about it. And he said, well, follow her to wherever she disappeared to. And that was our first contact, really, with the Chinese remote viewing effort. And wow. She and I became friends over the years. Yeah,
and that was going to be my final question, specifically in reference to a lot of the things coming out with UFO, UAP, with recent whistleblowers, things like that. The idea of psionic control, the idea of connecting not only with an intelligence but with a non-human intelligence. In that kind of way, because like you said, that was kind of a psychic wave between the two of you that you both recognized when you saw each other in session. Is it possible to remotely control somebody in that kind of way? Influence?
We try remote influence is different from remote control.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
That remote influencing should be called remote persuasion. But you have to understand that different species think in different ways.
Sure.
And so if you want to contact and, you know, communicate with aliens, hey, start off with your dog. Okay. Start off with your cat. Well, your cat's a void in the universe. So start off with your dog or with a horse or something like that, you know. Mentally, cats don't exist anyway, so that's not nice. but
we're,
you know,
just not evolved enough for them, that's all.
You can do what you can train to do.
Mm.
But you have to train. Yeah.
Yeah.
To train somebody to read documents in a safe doesn't train them to talk to aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. And it's kind of like saying that a Green Beret is trained in the same way as an engineer.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like absolutely not.
No,
not whatsoever.
Trained like anybody else. Or,
yeah. You know, there's specialized training when it comes to those things. You know,
that's right.
And
yeah. Now that it's out in the public, it's available to the public.
Yeah.
But like you said earlier, there's so much fake
tripe.
There's
a lot of tripe out there.
That how do you know? And what you do is you ask for proof. You ask for their, professionalism, you ask for their history. And now there are a lot of people out there saying, oh, yes, I was a remote viewer in the military unit. And they're lying.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah. So what are you going to do?
Yep. Absolutely. And, you're, of course, an amazingly trustable source when it comes to this stuff, Lynn. I loved your classes. I can't thank you enough for letting me go through your classes. It really is a life-changing thing to come across. And in addition to that, the way that yours are arranged are so great because they're very, very short videos. Typically, the first couple minutes tells you about the last 5 minutes in the previous video. So there's some reinforcement.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you can't do it every day back to back, or I normally sat through about 6 or 7 videos every Monday for a long time.
Yeah.
Monday was just my set aside remote viewing day for class and session.
One of the things about the CRV is that you can watch a video or read a section in the manual, and you learn from it, and you go and you 5 years later, you've had all this remote viewing experience. You come back and watch that same video or read that same paragraph.
Yep.
And now you have an understanding that lets you see deeper what it says.
Yeah.
Then you go get more experience for a year or so. You come back and do the same thing. And you see stuff that is right there in that paragraph that you swear was not there, because it tells you the deeper things that you've learned.
Well,
and this is why I give permanent access to anybody who signs up. And like right now, the basic course has over 160 videos in it.
Yeah.
The intermediate has over 140 videos. The advanced, and I've still got like 8 more courses to make videos on.
Yeah. Well, and
at 85 years old, I'll never get it completed.
That is something to be said, because there is a lot here, Lynn, when it comes to training. Everything from postgraduate monitor, project manager, report writing.
By the way, if you would click on free resources, target of the week, analogies, terminology, and FAQ. That's target of the week. I have about 400 more to add to it, but there are over 400 targets in there, and they're according to the date that I put them up. It gives you front loading that is neutral. The target's an event. Describe the event. That way you know you're not supposed to describe people and cars, and just the event.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it didn't tell you anything about the event. And so you do your session. And then you come back and click on the same thing, and down at the bottom, click here for feedback. You missed it. Yeah.
Oh, let's go to another one.
Pick any one of them. Okay. Click here for feedback. And you get your feedback. And then you can sit there and judge your session. If you do dowsing, you can look at where you put your X on the map. You can look at where the target actually is. And you can score yourself just immediately.
Yeah.
We don't track anybody who uses these. It's free and open to the public. You don't sign up. You don't give us your email address or anything like that. We don't want to know.
Yep.
It's here for you. And you can take these things, and just by practicing these things, you can get better.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just it. It really is a great resource. You've put together some amazing stuff there at the crviewer.com
now,
at the PSI.
If you would bring that back up and click on the one that says P2IT.
Okay. Just a second here. So let's go back. Let's go back.
Free resources.
Free resources.
Down there, P2IT at the very bottom. Okay, this brings up a grid like this, okay? This is for the beginning training before you ever start doing targets and all that. What we do is we say you're supposed to describe the target. Click on any one of them. Okay, I'm going to describe the target. The color is green. The shape is stair step. The texture is rocky. The thing is outdoors. The space is vast. And so, you know, you describe what you see. Okay? And you practice doing that with all these different targets.
Yeah.
Now, after you get good at doing that, then you can come back and say, okay, I'm not going to click on one of them, but I'm going to pick one of those numbers. Yeah. And I'm going to see what I can get. Oh, well, the next one is red. It has people in it. It has, it has water, something like that. And I'm just making stuff up here. I'm not viewing. But click on them. Okay. Yes, there is red. Yes, there's people. No, there's no water.
Yep.
And so you score yourself, your perceptions, you score what you got right, you score what you got wrong. And by practicing these, you get to where you start picking up things that that are real. And you learn how to score yourself. And then you go to the target of the week, where you have very complex targets, very complex feedback. And sure enough, by that time, you're getting pretty good at doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. And yet, once again, you can see there where at this point you've been given a coordinate number, which is just an arbitrary number assigned to the target. You know,
it's actually the date.
Oh, the date.
This is 2006.
Yeah.
January, February, March, April the 12th.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Yeah.
So.
If you scroll up to the top, you'll see the front loading. Keep going up. Oh, this didn't have any. Oh.
There's the.
Oh, tasking. There was no tasking on this one.
Yeah.
Okay, this one had no tasking, whatever. Not even any clues. You were just, hey, the target's a target. Describe it.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, the target's an event. Okay. Describe what goes on at the event. And so you describe it. And then you click there for feedback. And when you do, you get a picture and an explanation of the event and what went on at the target.
Yeah. And, you know, once again, the system that you have set up for online training is absolutely awesome. It's great.
Thank you.
It is so user-friendly and allows people to be able to practice on their own, to be able to do things with targets that are out there in a database, you know, that other people have.
Well, that's the thing, you know, it's a very complex science. It really is.
Yeah.
And when I was teaching in class, we had 3 days to cover all of basic. And we have now for the basic level, we cover each video covers one specific aspect.
Yep.
And we have over 160, and we have webinars every other week that covers what's not in the course.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and that's just it.
This is not a game where you sit in a circle in the living room this is the real thing. Yeah.
No, and that's just it. There's no mentalism involved, nothing like that. No, no actual tricks up the sleeve. Nothing like that. It's really remarkable once you start getting into it. And I want to thank you once again for changing my life with it, Lynn, because it really did give me a far more than a peek behind the curtain, taking your classes and things like that. So, I rate myself nowhere near anybody like you or Michelle Fried or anything like that. I am a solid C-minus student when it comes to this. But I am passionately fascinated by it. And it is one of those things that I will keep mm-hmm. learning throughout my life and keep applying and keep Good. Using.
I'm at the level where I am because of one of the rules of CRB training.
What's that?
You ready?
Yes.
Practice, practice, practice.
That's right.
Like, okay.
That's how you get to Carnegie yeah. Hall, my friend. Practice.
Yeah, that's right.
Lynn, thank you so much for your time tonight. Thank you so much for your time and your friendship always. It's always great talking with you, catching up with you.
It's great talking to you.
Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to sign up for your classes, where they can go to find out more. And of course, all the good stuff.
I don't go for mass numbers of students. I go for students who really want it and all that. If you go to crviewer.com and scroll down to the bottom, we're now offering online training. There's a video there. Associative remote viewing, basic level, intermediate level, and all that. And there's a video there that sort of warns people off, saying, hey, if what you're looking for is the mystic and the fast and speedy, then hey, go somewhere else, because you're not going to get it here. This is the real thing. And so on. Then each one of these has a link. I think if you scroll down a little bit further, future courses, for more information about these courses, click here. Yeah. And if you click in that, it will take you to the remote viewing training.
And once again,
who's that young guy there?
Yeah, I know, right? That's like my headshot that Michelle Fried gives me trouble with all the time. Like, what's that 20-year-old headshot that you have?
I know.
But once again, amazing classes, amazing techniques that you teach over there at CR Viewer, Lynn. Thank you so much for your time, as always, your candid answers and candor. It's always great talking with you. It's just such a casual conversation about such deep,
I enjoy
topics.
Talking to you. I appreciate the fact that you don't have a list of questions and answers. We just talk.
I can't do that, man. Like, I don't know. I know a lot of hosts that do. I get asked that a lot by guests, like, oh, you know, what are the questions you're going to ask? It's like, well, we're going to talk about your new book and what you do.
Yeah.
And I hope you can do that for an hour.
Oh, listen, it irritates me because they always ask the same questions that I've already talked about on 100 other videos, podcasts and all that.
For me, it's
same question over and over and over. Yeah.
It's the organic conversation. That is what it's all about, you know. And,
it really is, yeah.
Back in the day when we were dudes and beer, it was the deep conversation over drinks, you know. And now it's the fact of deep conversations, what's necessary in the world. That's how we pry things out of the world. Yeah. That's how we challenge each other with the thrust and parry and block of conversation. So once again, thank you as always, Lynn. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience, all right? While you are online, everybody, checking out the amazing work of Lynn Buchanan over at crviewer.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. Curious Realm is where you can find all of our episodes. That is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That's where you can find our events page with all kinds of awesome events that we have covered, everything from the Roswell UFO Festival to, you know, Lone Star Paracon, Texas Bigfoot, the International Remote Viewing Association, which we will be going to again this year in Cloudcroft, New Mexico. And also stay tuned next week, folks, for our official coverage of PsyGames International. The first annual PsyGames is coming up in Charlottesville, and we leave early tomorrow morning to go speak at that amazing event. So stop on by, check that out, check out PsyGames, check out Lynn's work, make sure to stop on by Curious Research. If you are a researcher like us, if you do things in the world of paranormal, parapsychology, UFOs, UAPs, if you are a remote viewer, our latest book is, oh, there it is, The Remote Viewing Session Journal. It is available, and feel free to use the code LYN, L-Y-N, to save 50% off of the Remote Viewing Session Journal, as well as any of the binaural beat music that we have there on the website, folks. Thank you so much, everybody, as always, for your time. It is your open hearts, your open minds that make the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit GroundZeroPlus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious, and remember, the other side is always watching.